Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addisk, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Thursday, June 12th, 2014. And it's kind of been an exciting day in the markets today. We have gold up. Paper markets are down. Once again, a lot of things are going on, and we are here to talk about them. Good afternoon, Al.
Hello, Melody.
Yeah, we had some no real big moves in gold, but I'll take $12.90 for the day on 1274. We have silver down 35 cents at 19.65. The white metals, platinum, palladium, and rhodium took a sizable hit today, as there's been an informal agreement that could end the long-running strike in South Africa's platinum sector. You had platinum down $40 at 1447. Palladium took a huge hit, down four and a third percent, down $37 at 827. And rhodium was down 20 at 1175. You have three mining companies say they had reached an informal agreement with the unions. This strike is one of the longest in South Africa's history, and it has been going on since late January. There was an initial walkout by 80,000 platinum miners that contributed to the first quarter contraction in the country's economy. And the mining companies were hit by the strike, but they did announce an informal agreement today with the union Thursday. The stoppage had affected about 40% of the global supply of platinum and metal used in jewelry, and we also know in catalytic converters in cars. So the announcement by the companies, we certainly now see a major turnaround in the course of the strike. Companies, union strikers, they'd been in this deadlock. Of course, there was shafts that were closed and loss of thousands of mine workers' jobs. And the South African government that had been called in to mediate the strike negotiations actually pulled out of the talks on Monday. So the miners have offered pay increases up to 10%, which would push the overall minimum pay package up to $1,200 by July 2017. This would include cash allowances and necessities such as housing. So basic wages more than doubled to $1,200. They demanded that the mine workers have their basic wages more than doubled to $1,200 a month. That's considering the work that they do and the danger of those mines. It's incredible, $1,200. So, and we're going to talk about that, the middle class here, you know, where the median wage is $45,000 a year. So anyway, so those were the big hits that we saw on platinum, palladium, and rhodium. We'll see how deep this will come to those precious metals. I think platinum, you're going to, you know, I think that'll mellow out the most only because, you know, its relationship with the gold. And it's always played a certain range within the gold prices. I think the one that has the most room to lose is, of course, palladium. And rhodium is really a no-brainer. That's, you know, it's going to follow along the lines most likely of platinum. And it didn't go up that much, so it's not going to come down that much. But the one that really ran was palladium. And the paper markets today, oh, they got a little bit of a hit today. And you had the, let me get back to my paper markets here. You had the Dow down 109 points, 16,737 2 days. It was down triple digits. You had the NASDAQ down 34, 42.97, along with S&P down 13 at 19.30. The 10-year yield bumped downward 2.59%. And, you know, you're going to have all kinds of reasons and beliefs and opinions why the markets went down today. Certainly the oil price surge, and we didn't get to those numbers yet. We'll talk about those in just a few minutes, about the oil price surge on the what's happening in Iraq. So you had oil settle above $106 a barrel. And what's interesting is because watching programs, Al, a lot of the oil from Iraq really comes from the southern part, and the part where a lot of this is going on is at so far is in this northern part. So you haven't seen this much of a problem with oil so far. However, you know, long term and how this comes out certainly is going to put a lot of pressure on the prices. So there was also disappointing economic news today coming out. U.S. retail sales rose for a fourth straight month in May, but the growth was below economists' forecast. Consumer spending rose 0.3% last month. Of course, a lot of that was helped by the surge in auto demand, and it was also shy of what everyone had anticipated. So a little bit of pressure there. Airline stocks were down big today. Of course, you're going to see that with the higher crude prices. And a lot of things going on, a lot of things to talk about. And folks, if you have any questions for us, you can email us at dgscoins.com. dgscoins.com is the website. If you have questions, mail them to questions@dgscoins.com. questions@dgscoins.com. And, of course, you can always call us on our toll-free number if you have any questions or comments at 1-800-596-8191. That's 1-800-596-8191. We'd love to hear from you. If you have any questions or comments to what we are discussing today. So there's a lot of things going on, Al. I didn't get to, let me see if I can get back to see what the USDX was doing today. The USDX was down 0.18. at 80.59, so a little pressure there. And, of course, crude oil was up at 2.32 points at 106.72. So it's interesting to see what's going on in Iraq. I wonder how that's going to affect all those poor people that are holding Iraqi dinars.
I don't expect them too much.
You know?
They bought them for, you know, a million for a penny or something like that.
But there's a lot of hopes and dreams that have been based on the Iraqi dinar because of these people who sell this and were not very forthright in the problems that you have in a country like Iraq and their currency. And certainly the revaluation of a currency, it doesn't go from, you know, buying it at pennies, or I'd be sitting here with my 100 trillion Zimbabwe currency dollar waiting for it to be revalued back to 100 trillion. So, you know, I got it for free. So anyway.
There's always hope, Melody.
Yeah, I'm going
to. Hang on to that one right along with your Confederate dollars. And there's hope.
You think there's hope?
Your lottery tickets. Save your lottery tickets, too.
But 31, we'll be talking about Iraq here in just a little bit. It's interesting. I think one of my favorite websites is antiwar.com. And they always break it down by country as far as, and they just publish some spot-on information. There's no sensationalism. I mean, they have some pretty powerful writers, and it really does give you an idea of what's going on there. I've always liked that site, antiwar.com, so if folks there, check it out. And they had some great articles and information being released about Iraq, how these Al-Qaeda is actually coming through the Syrian border, and they're basically breaking down the border. Now, the borders were just basically, big berms so that, people couldn't drive over it, and you had to be forced to go through their, their regular,
openings?
Were their traffic customs or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, I suppose customs. You can also tunnel under there, too. The Mexican people are good at tunneling into this country. They don't necessarily have to pay attention to our berms or our customs.
About Mexico, but these Iraqis. And so they're looking to truly claim a large part of Iraq. And you have Iran that is certainly siding with Iraq and helping them out to fight these folks. So,
well, who's Iran siding with, the rebels or the government, or do you know?
They're siding with the government.
The government of Iraq.
So, because they don't want these Al-Qaedas in there, and because it is of different tribes. And we come back to the tribal analysis of what is happening and what had happened and why these people can't live amongst. And as bad as Saddam Hussein was, he did keep the peace to some degree. So.
Yeah, I did. And it's because, again, this is not a legitimate nation. We mentioned this yesterday to some extent. Iraq is a nation that was carved out of the Middle East by colonial powers. I don't know, probably after World War II, perhaps after World War I, but sometime in the 19th century. And they just said, okay, here are the border lines, we're going to make them. Well, that may have suited the colonial powers, but it had nothing to do with the tribes that were there who didn't like each other and still don't like each other and don't want to be part of the same nation. And if one of the tribes is going to be running the government, the other one is going to be oppressed. And it's a formula for a civil war. It's a formula for national division before this is all over. And the only way you could prevent that was to have a dictator like Saddam Hussein, who essentially would beat the heck out of anybody who tried to compromise the existing order. If you got in the way, you got thumped hard. And that's the way they forced these tribes who hate each other, they forced them to live together. Now he's not there, the force isn't there, the tribes are going to get at each other's throats.
Well, what's interesting now, if this is Al-Qaeda coming from Syria, and we know we've given weapons to the Al-Qaeda in Syria. So now they're using these weapons that come.
No.
So my question is, Iraq, the U.S., of course, are we going to do airstrikes in Iraq? I mean, how far are we going to be dragged in?
Yeah.
So now we're fighting against those who we supported in Syria.
I think we've blown up as much in Iraq as we're going to blow up, and I don't believe we're going back to blow up any more in the near future. All right? They need more blown up over there. Let them do it themselves.
But it's sad, and listening to a politician this morning, he initially was on there to talk about the Cantor situation, and they switched to Iraq. He says, well, we spent too much time, man. Though, you know, he was saying time. That was all they were worried about. And then he suddenly switched it, as a true politician will, to the poor lives that were lost over there. And, you know, they're just, it is very true. The lives and the things that were lost, and, you know, the billion-dollar building we built over there. I mean, it is...
Yeah, but it was all based on a false premise, and the false premise is that Iraq is a viable nation, and it's not. It's probably three different nations. When it's all done and the civil war is finally broken out, I would imagine that Iraq will break at least into two sections and maybe three. Well, and that tension has been there as long as I've been alive.
Well,
and the government comes in and says, ha ha, we will accept this and we can make this, we can force the people to live together when they don't want to.
Well,
and the truth is they can't.
It's for other reasons, but it's for the oil and so forth.
No, I get that, but they ignore the underlying. They just thought, oh, we can make these people live together. No, really you can't. That tension is there. They're not going to get along. You might just as well face up to that fact, divide the country into a couple of chunks, and then do whatever it is you plan on doing. And the chunks, the individual chunks, will be stable. But as a single artificial nation, this thing is unstable as plutonium. You put these people in too tight, they're going to explode.
So we will see higher. They don't settle the situation. I don't know what the outcome of this is going to be. I don't think
it's... Bunch of dead bodies. That's what the outcome will be, a bunch of dead bodies. You know, we're dealing with holy war on this thing, as near as I'm able to understand. The fundamental forces are ultimately of two or more religions. It's not just a question of tribes. It's a question of religions. And when you get into holy war, there is no compromise. When you are fighting for what you believe God wants, you can't compromise. It is the worst kind of war the world ever sees, is holy war, because anyone who is not practicing your faith, they get murdered, beheaded, whatever. There is no mercy. There's no compromise, no mitigation. You can't cut them a deal, make them an offer they can't refuse. The only offer is either we kill all of them or they kill all of us. Holy war. And that's where they are over there. So we'll see what happens, but it won't be fun.
No, it won't. In the meantime, we can enjoy higher gold prices and higher gasoline prices. So, today, the House bill passes. The House passes a bill to make small businesses tax break permanent. But guess what? They're going to veto it out of the White House. You don't want to help any small businesses. They're the ones who really truly create jobs. We just, you know, the White House talks about all that 1%, but yet when it comes to being small businesses, they certainly don't want to do anything there. But there was the tax breaks allows business owners to more quickly write off the cost of computers, machinery, and do improvements and so forth. And it did expire at the beginning of this year, along with more than 50 other temporary tax breaks that usually get extended. But and the vote was 272 to 144 in favor of the bill. And it looks like it'll probably be vetoed.
Vetoed by the president?
The White House threatens to veto.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like I said, don't help those small corporations, those small businesses to do better.
Well, we've got to get the money from someplace. I mean, we're going to rob somebody. Somebody's got to come up with the money. And if they don't do it, well, how about people who have bank accounts?
Yeah.
How about them, Melody? Or pension funds?
Right.
401ks. I mean, we've got to steal that money someplace in order to hold this racket together for a while longer.
There's a lot of strange things going on with foreign banks and a lot of these huge banks. I was reading an article today about how Citibank, again, is getting hammered by the Chinese in their loan agreements, the collaterals that they used in the commodities sector. And the Chinese use these commodities as collateral, and there were no there was no commodities to
that's from the, who was it? I can't remember the Texan's name anymore, out of the 60s. He did that. He claimed to have millions of gallons of corn oil or something. It wasn't there. The bins were empty. We have to take a break for some commercial announcements. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. We'll be back in a minute. I think it was Billy Solvesis.
Make the aspirin mistake. Aspirin was discovered by mistake during World War II and suppresses your immune system and prevents blood clotting. Don't expose your body to risk when you can use a natural inflammation and pain reliever called Extra Strength Pain Relief by Apothecary Herbs. Discover the power this formula has with salicin to enter the system in 60 seconds to work hard and relieve pain for 12 hours. Whether it's arthritis, sports injury, or flu, you can relieve aches, pain, and swelling with our Extra Strength Pain Relief formula. Call Apothecary Herbs now, toll-free, 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Are you concerned about prescription drug dependency to stay healthy? Are you worried that the cost and availability of your medications may put your health at risk? Perhaps it's time you consider a natural, safe, and effective way to deal with your health problems. If only you knew where to start. Start right here. Tune in to Herb Talk Live with herbalist Wendy Wilson every Tuesday and Thursday evening, 7 p.m. on AmericanVoiceRadio.com, where your healthcare options just became endless.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis. This is Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver. And my co-host is Melody Cederstrom. What's next, Melody?
That's me. And I just want to remind the listeners to make sure that when you're looking for your Silver Eagles, to give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. We have a great special going on with Silver Eagles. And everybody really enjoys that free Silver Eagle that you can get. We do have a small minimum on those orders. So just give us 800-375-4188. Silver Eagles. I think you're going to see it turn around a little bit as far as the numbers coming out of the mint on the volume. It's just pretty much running steady with last month. But still, we've had some tremendous months this year for the purchasing of Silver Eagles. It almost looks like there's been a little bit more buying in gold this month than silver, but silver certainly has won the race. I mean, if someone wanted to call it a race as far as silver over gold purchases of Gold Eagles since the first of the year. We got some great prices in gold. Received a flyer out today from my buyer of $20 gold pieces, and they actually sent out this flyer requesting $20 gold pieces, generic.
They want you to supply them with $20 gold pieces?
They're looking to buy product. They're looking to buy product. And I found that quite interesting.
Sure is.
Lots of times we can get into a heated market where, you know, all dealers across this country, we saw it with the Indians. It was probably 8-9 years ago. There was a big push across the country, every dealer except me, because I knew the prices were way over, these coins were way overpriced for the value of the coins. But these premiums just increased incredibly on the Indians. And they sent out a flyer, have any Indians, you know, we'd be more than happy to buy them back. You know, we have, you know. But this was for all generic $20 gold pieces, 25s, 10s, up through and including 64s. And I found that interesting. So they're anticipating, people are positioning, because everyone knows that this cannot continue to have these low prices. And when it breaks, product will be difficult to find.
Well, do you think they're soliciting the sale of $20 gold pieces because they're anticipating a demand? Or are they soliciting retailers like yourself to sell those coins to them because they're already out?
I don't think they're out, but I think it's...
Well, they're diminished. I'm sure they're not flat out of those coins. But are they so low? Is their supply so low right now that they're saying, uh-oh? In other words, has the demand for $20 gold pieces already picked up significantly, or are they expecting that it will pick up in the foreseeable future?
I sold more $20 gold pieces this month so far than I had for the full month of May. And so the buying has picked up in $20 gold pieces, and they're a terrific buy. I mean, they're an incredible buy at these low prices. So I do think that the tide is changing. As I mentioned, even the American Gold Eagles, you know, the buying has been a little more focused on gold this month so far than actually silver, where we saw in the past couple of months huge volumes of silver being sold. So, you know, does it mean anything? It means interest is there. It means product is flying off the shelf. It means that I agree with you, Al, that certainly product has diminished. They need the product to supply. And it also tells me that it's just not little mom and pop people that are buying a coin here and a coin there. They're big buyers. And that's what I've had, big buyers of $20 gold. So, and I think this is a way to fulfill these orders across the country. So, again, it's a sign. And it's, you know, when you look at these markets, Al, they are just so darn rigged by the government. They're creating bubbles. There was an interesting article out today by Mohammed El Arian. He used to work with one of the biggest bond kings. And it was an interesting article because what he talks about is how the Fed has been pushing the stock and bond prices to bubblish levels. And that's exactly what it is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're hoping that with they're able to inspire the consumer to keep spending and with physical investments and hiring, hoping to eventually justify the higher prices in stocks and bonds. But that's not going to happen.
Well, I think, you know, the important, I agree that we talk about you buy low and you sell high. It's the fundamental formula for any sort of success at investing. You buy something for $100, you sell it at $200. You make a $100 profit. You don't buy at $200 and sell it at $100. You take a $100 loss. You want to buy when the price is low and you want to sell when the price is high. What that reminds me of right now is we have a stock market that's at record highs. And anyone who's following this understands that the market itself is nervous about a possible correction in the near future. They expect one. They know it's got to happen. They've had 48, 50 months of persistent rise. Now there has to be a correction, which means the stock market is high. What's the fundamental formula for creating wealth? You buy low and you sell high, which means now is the time to sell the stocks. The stocks are high. I admit they may go higher. I get that. But they may also fall dramatically in the near future. You know, it can happen next week. So they're high. Sell them. What do you do with your money once you've sold your stock? Look for an investment that is low and buy it. What investment is low at this time, Melody?
Gee, let me think, Al. Again, we got some great prices on both silver.
That's what it comes down to. And it is a perfect formula right now. Everyone understands that gold is down. Everyone understands the stocks are up. You buy low and sell high. What this is for, in this case, you can sell high stocks and buy low gold. It is, you know, no one can make you a guarantee, but that is the formula. Buy low, sell high.
Okay.
And we are in circumstances where that opportunity is there for you if you happen to own stocks. Dump them. Get yourself some gold.
And the reason the stock market is going to fall, there are fundamental reasons it's going to fall. And just like what he says in this article, there's a huge wedge that was created between their stimulus and the economy. And it's not coming together. You know, the markets love the stimulus, but it's not doing what it's supposed to in order to bridge that gap and to allow a true economic recovery in order to take the place of the stimulus. It ain't happening, folks. And what money is sitting there to be taken at their little whims? And that's all of your financial pension funds, your IRAs, your CDs, all your cash that you're sitting there. It's there for the taking. But people have short memories. They forget about Cyprus. They forget about that precedence has been set up. In fact, there's another bank that is eyeing the same thing, that the account holders have to pay to keep banks in business.
You know, if we had legitimate stimulus, it would not be stimulating the markets. It would be stimulating our productive capacity. If we'd had legitimate stimulus in this country, it would have been a stimulus to create jobs, not to create wealth in the stock markets. And I don't think we've had any stimulus that was really inclined to create jobs. I know they give it a certain amount of lip service and probably, you know, they claim they've created some jobs and they may have mitigated the job loss. I don't know that they created so much as they stemmed the flow of job losses to some degree. But that's where we should have put the money. More jobs, more industry, more production. Instead, we put it into banks. And what did we get for it? More of the same.
You know, and it's really just common sense, Al. I mean, when you look at and he talks about the moving pieces in the global economy. You know, there's no way it can be worked with the precision to keep it going. I mean,
no one even knows what's going on right now. And you see article after article that makes that clear. We were listening. We talked about this maybe earlier this week, end of last week at the earliest, but in the last week or 10 days, the European Central Bank has decided to use experimental strategies to deal with the potential deflation and depression in the European Union. When they start to do experiments, it means they don't have any established means of control. That means they are now desperate. There are financial mechanisms that are available that have been used for a century or more. And what they're admitting when they say, well, we're going to try an experiment, we're going to try negative interest rates and see how that works. It's an implicit admission that the existing strategies don't work. We are off in strange territory, and we've never been here before. No one really knows for sure what to do and how to handle it. And when you see that, you think about it, you say, my gosh, they don't even know what's going on here. What does that tell you? It says, it suggests that the possibility of some sort of a collapse is increased. I'm not saying it's 100% or 90%. I don't know what percentage it is, but the probability that we might have a financial collapse is increased simply because we are in uncharted territory and no one knows exactly what to do. And therefore, there's an increased probability that someone is going to do something wrong. Someone's going to do something stupid. Someone's going to do something that might sound like it makes sense, and it turns out to be completely idiotic. And if we do, we have the collapse. What does that mean? You protect yourself, recognizing that possibility. You know, it's like having someone who is the captain of the Titanic, and he suggests that the way to get the water, we've got a hole in the boat, and the water's come into the bow, and the way to get the water out is we'll cut a hole in the back of the ship, and if we go real fast, it'll drain out the stern. Well, it's an interesting theory. It might work, but odds are it's evidence that the ship is going to go down. And that's where we are right now. And people who can see that will react in a way that protects themselves as best they can. And those who don't get it, well, they'll wait around until we see if the water will, in fact, if we really kick up the engines on the Titanic, maybe all the water will flow out of the stern of the ship. It could happen.
Yeah, we didn't have a lot of, good old Titanic. It's always there when you need it, isn't it?
Yeah, metaphor. I suppose there's probably only 50 metaphors or less than that people use in the whole world. Titanic is one of them.
Yes.
But great metaphors I have known and used. I should write a book on that, Melody. Probably only require a few pages. One metaphor per page. I suppose I'd come up with maybe 20.
These are kind of articles that, to me, do they mean anything? They're interesting. And I think, Al, these are just things for people to think about, how our standards have declined so much. Here you have a Missouri company recalls 4,000 pounds of beef product due to mad cow fear. Now, you know, this is something that you always heard somewhere else. You know, we're supposed to have this great Department of Agriculture and the USDA, who is supposed to make sure that, we have nothing but healthy cattle that gets slaughtered and given to the grocery stores. But a Missouri company has recalled tainted beef products distributed to restaurants, two restaurants, and a grocery chain. And what's amazing is they never mention, or did they mention, let's see. And this isn't the first time recently. I don't think it mentions. I know Whole Foods distributed some a couple months ago, but I don't know exactly what the restaurants are and the grocery chain is today. But again, it's just another sign. It's great to be a vegetarian. So.
Yeah, you say that, but the way they, even that is questionable. You've reached a point. We are reaching a point where people are going to take an enormous interest, a considerable interest, in growing their own food.
Mm-hmm.
Because right now we have food that is treated with pesticides that's inside the plant itself. It's part of the plant. Right? And it makes it more effective. The pests, the insects and whatever don't eat the plants, and therefore they get more plant out per acre, and they can sell more and make more money, and that seems like a great idea. But they are selling those pesticides to you and me, and we're eating them as part of our broccoli and our tomatoes and whatever. And in the end, it's likely to do us harm. And we have this commercialized, corporatized agriculture that is not growing food. They are growing products. And there's a difference in values. Get food, okay, we're making food that's going to be good for people to eat. We're making products. It's good for the corporation to sell. Products don't care whether it's good or not. Whether the food is good for you, bad for you, it doesn't matter. How much money can be made? If you want to get away from that, we're going to see a situation where you may want to grow your own food before this is all over. I've been looking at those. We've been thinking about setting up an aquaponics system. We'll grow our fish and grow our vegetables. I'm Alfred Adusk here on Financial Survival with Melody Cederstrom. We'll be back in a moment. Please stay tuned.
countries have denied internet access for their people during civil strife. The FCC seized in-use commercial shortwave frequencies right after the September 11th attacks. No one communication system can be depended on to be there when you need information. You need choices. You need a KU band free-to-air satellite system from AVR. The AVR system includes a receiver, an LNB, and a 75-centimeter dish. All you need to get on your own is the coaxial cable. The system is delivered to your door for $149.99. That's right, delivered for $149.99. That's the shipping and the system, $149.99. Call 541-225-4659. That's 541-225-4659. Or visit AmericanVoiceRadio.com and click Satellite System.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it: to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. Invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cedarstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Folks, I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cedarstrom on Financial Survival. What's next, Melody?
I suppose we're going to save this. So we wanted to talk about the Americans middle class. Since you don't have that information about the median net worth, it's only $45,000.
Yeah, that's something we'll do another time. I haven't seen that email yet. You were going to send that information to me. But I can tell you, I'll write an article on this before this is done. We'll do a segment of the program. We've talked for years about the difficulty, if not impossibility, of paying the national debt. And Melody has an article that I haven't yet seen, but she's told me about it, that says the median income for Americans is $45,000 each. All right? Or median net worth, excuse me, is $45,000 each per American. Well, the national debt that the government claims is $17 trillion. And $17 trillion divided by 317 million works out to somewhere in the neighborhood of $55,000, something like that, per person. It means that in order to pay the national debt, you're going to have to, each of us is going to have to give up our $45,000 average net worth, plus we'll still be in debt for another $10,000 on top of that. And that's if the national debt is $17 trillion. John Williams says, no, it's actually closer to $90 trillion. If you calculate it the way we did 20 years ago, national debt is not $17 trillion. It's actually closer to $90 trillion, which translates into something like $275,000 per person. And here we have a net worth of $45,000 each, or at least average net worth for the American people. So where are we going to get the money to pay off the $275,000 thousand if the national debt is actually $90 trillion? You owe $275, I owe $275, Melody owes $275,000, and on average we only have $45,000 net worth. That means we are short over $200,000 per person. That debt can't be paid. It won't ever be paid. And then we have the national government comes out, Congressional Budget Office, and they calculate that we owe, our total national debt is over $200 trillion, including unfunded liabilities liabilities, and yet here we are with an average median net worth of $45,000. If we're at $200 trillion total debt in this country, that translates into something like $700,000 for every man, woman, and child in the country. And if our median net worth is only $45,000, how are we going to pay the $700,000 that is your fair share, my fair share, Melody's fair share of the national debt? And the answer is, we're not. Why is that important? It's important, again, because one man's debt is another man's asset. If we have $17 trillion in debt, we also have issued $17 trillion in United States bonds. If we are in fact in debt for $90 trillion, as John Williams says, well, there's $90 trillion in U.S. bonds out there. If the real debt, well, I won't get into unfunded liabilities right now. Let's not talk about that. But if there's $90 trillion in debt and there's $90 trillion in bonds, and we can't pay but maybe three-quarters of that, it means that three-quarters of the value of the bonds is going to be repudiated. And those of you who are holding those paper debt instruments are going to discover that they have, that on average, their value, you've lost 75% or more. It can't be paid, so it won't be paid. And that is the great significance of the United States national debt. And again, that's only the national debt. That doesn't include the debt that we owe on mortgages and cars and whatever else, credit cards. It's just one more bit of evidence to support the contention that we are in such difficult circumstances, impossible circumstances. We can't get out of this thing. The only question is, when does the roof fall in? Right? Maybe next week, maybe next year, maybe 5 years from now. But it's more likely to be within the next few months than it is to be 5 years from now. Doesn't mean it's going to happen. I'm not making a prediction, but I'm saying it's more likely to be sooner than it is to be later. Again, prepare. If it makes sense to you, if the argument makes sense to you, get ready. What's next, Melody?
And, yesterday the explanation why the Dow was down 100 points was they all blamed it on the election of Cantor.
Oh, yeah.
Lack of it.
Yeah, I know. That must have done it. I'll make you a bet that 95% of the people in this country don't even know who Cantor is.
I know.
All right? And certainly not yesterday.
Well, I know.
It's like blaming it on the fact that a meteor hit the moon last month on the dark side. So what?
He is a big corporate Wall Streeter, cut me a break.
It's just more nonsense. More nonsense. And again, if all they've got for you is lies, nonsense, experiments, it indicates no one is in control. They're just riding this tiger and trying to keep it, they're just hoping they can hang on. That's all. And maybe something will turn up, and who knows, maybe one of the experiments will work. But odds are, when you get into experimental economics, guess what? Odds are you're going to have a difficult time and probably not too far into the future.
And then as they continue to go after the taxpayer to pay more and more and more and more, we can feel a little bit better about it. I suspect this is what it's supposed to do, is when they're going to publicize a Bill of Rights for taxpayers.
Well, they have. They've got one out right now. In fact, it's interesting to me. They've just published it in the last little while. The Internal Revenue Service has published what they call Your Rights as a Taxpayer, Publication 1, the Taxpayer Bill of Rights. Now, the big question is whether you are or are not a taxpayer. These are your rights if you're a taxpayer. I like to look to my rights in the Bill of Rights of the Constitution, among other places, but that's one of my sources, and I don't think that applies to taxpayers. I think my Bill of Rights is stronger than the taxpayer Bill of Rights, but they've got, number one, the right to be informed. Number two, the right to quality service. Three, the right to pay no more than the correct amount of tax, whatever that is. You know, there have been studies several years ago where they called 3-4 different IRS offices, and they sent identical tax returns to the IRS offices and asked them to please calculate the tax on behalf of the taxpayer, and every one of them had a different answer. The different IRS offices didn't even agree on how much these people should pay. The right to challenge the IRS's position and be heard, that's a big deal. It's an administrative hearing. Number five, the right to appeal an IRS decision in an independent forum, not a judicial forum. The right to finality. They can't just drag it on forever. They got to give you an answer someplace. Right to privacy, right to confidentiality, right to retain representation, the right to a fair and just tax system. But in the article that deals with this, let me see if I can find this. Yeah, here it is right here. They say, they admit, this is, we're not creating any new rights here, said the current IRS Commissioner John Kuskin. He said, we're simply trying to compile them in a simple, understandable format for taxpayers. So we're not getting new rights. They're just being made aware of rights that have been here all along, if you could find them. But they cannot, they say there may be some problems. For example, the right to quality service, that's one of our new rights in the Bill of Rights, says taxpayers have the right to receive prompt, courteous, and professional assistance in their dealing with the IRS. However, Commissioner Koskinen, he said, budget cuts have diminished the agency's ability to answer questions from taxpayers. All right? So you have the right to get it, but they don't have the money to provide it. All right? You have the right to quality service. They don't have the right. They don't have enough money to provide it. He says, as for the right to a fair and just tax system, Commissioner Koskinen said, we do the best we can with the code we have. Well, there's inspiring. That's inspiring. They're saying, it's as fair and just as an unfair and unjust tax system can be. That's essentially what he's saying. So what is your right to a fair and just tax system when they do the best they can with the code we have? It's pretty much, you know, it really isn't even there. You don't even have that right. The one that's interesting to me, however, because I've bumped heads with the IRS a couple of times in the past, is number one is the right to be informed. Taxpayers have the right to know what they need to do to comply with the tax laws. They are entitled to clear explanations of the laws and IRS procedures in all tax forms, instructions, publications, notices, and correspondence. They have the right to be informed of IRS decisions about their tax accounts and to receive clear and receive clear explanations of the outcomes. On two occasions, I've bumped heads with the IRS. And the first time, I really didn't know what I was doing. This goes back to about 1991, all right? But through dumb luck and the grace of God, I sent them a series of questions. And they just stopped. I didn't hear from them for about 2 years. And then one of them called me on the phone and says, where's that tax return for 1990 or 91? I don't remember what they're talking about. I don't remember which year it was particular. When are you going to send that? And I said, when are you going to answer the letter I sent by registered mail to the IRS with my questions? He said, what letter? I don't know about any letter. I said, I sent a letter to you back then. A series of questions. I'd like you to answer them. I never heard another word from him. He said he'd look up the letter and he never came back. I had a similar situation when I began to understand this much better. 2008, thereabouts. And they inquired, they sent me a notice on one subject or another. And I wrote back. I responded with questions. I was careful, didn't make any statements. I didn't go silent. I understand enough about the law where it's clear to me that when they send me a notice, I have a right to ask questions. And if you're astute and you know which questions to ask, their notice creates my right of inquiry. My right of inquiry creates their duty to answer my questions. I know that this is unfamiliar to some people, but you may pay a little attention. You might learn something here in the last minute or two. Procedural due process consists of notice and opportunity to be heard. They send you notice, and if you respond with statements, it's deemed you have sufficient notice. If you respond with silence, it's deemed you have sufficient notice. Once you have sufficient notice, they can take you to the opportunity to be heard, which is an administrative hearing where you will be found guilty about 98% of the time. In my opinion, you don't want the opportunity to be heard, and the way you can avoid that opportunity is you have to control the notice. And you can't control the notice with statements, and you can't control it with silence, but you can with questions. You receive their notice, you respond with questions, they have to answer. If they don't answer, you've been denied procedural due process, in which case the court loses jurisdiction over the case. And so when I see the Bill of Rights, the Taxpayer Bill of Rights, and they specifically say we have the right to be informed, taxpayers have the right to know what they need to do to comply with the tax laws. They are entitled to clear explanations of the law and the IRS procedures in all tax forms, instructions, publications, notices, and correspondence. They have the right to be informed of IRS decisions about their tax accounts and to receive clear explanations of the outcome. When they're telling me we have the right to be informed, they are confirming the theory that I've advanced for a number of years in other places, where I talk about this right of inquiry as a function of notice. And they are verifying to me, I'm pleased to see this. You know, I hadn't seen the right to be informed previously in the IRS tax laws. This only verifies. They send me a notice, I respond with questions. I have some great questions. I have questions that they can't answer on the record. And because of that, they apparently just say bye-bye. We have other sheep to shear. Don't mess with him. He asks questions. He's not nice because he asks us unpleasant questions. And all my questions are yes or no. All right? Yes or no. Yeah, that's all very, very simple. Simplest questions can be and blah, blah, blah. So, in any case, the IRS is inspiring confidence with the Taxpayer Bill of Rights. And I am confident that thanks to the Taxpayer Bill of Rights, it may be that next time the IRS hassles me, I'll be better equipped than I have been even in the past. I'm Alfred Addis. We're out of time. I want to thank all of you for listening. I'm here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. We'll be back tomorrow. In the meantime, may the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Frank, the producer. Bye-bye.
I work all night. I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. There never seems to be a single penny left for me.